Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Nicole Roberts, engagement editor here at the Jefferson City News Tribune. Hello, Nicole.
Hi.
So Nicole, in a former life at the News Tribune, was City Hall reporter, and she had been covering the a crumbling building at 200 East High Street. And so now we're circling back because the building is actually coming down today.
Finally.
So finally, exactly. So it has been a long road to get to this spot. Mm-hmm. So I guess, first of all, Nicole, why is the building being demolished?
So back in June of 2018, so almost 2 years ago, the west wall, so the wall that is facing Madison Street near the intersection of Madison and East High, it crumbled suddenly. They had to evacuate that building, and that building became a dangerous structure, essentially. So that's why they're having to demolish it, is the owners decided that they weren't going to repair that building. Yeah, they're just going to demolish it. But
okay, so it wasn't quite that simple.
That's the short version.
So let's dive a little bit deeper. So as you say, this is the corner of Madison and High.
Yep.
200 High Street is there on the corner.
Yes.
Next to it is 202.
Yes.
Which at that 200 had a law firm there at that time.
Had two law firms.
Okay. And then next to it at 202, what was in that building?
It was Mojuice and Love to Nourish.
Okay. And it was owned by the Weibergs.
Yeah. Correct? So Carol and Ruben Weiberg owned 202 East High Street. And then Nidert Properties, they don't own it anymore, but they owned 200 East High Street.
Okay. Where the law firms were.
Yes.
And so then just visually putting this to all together, there were actually three buildings connected right there.
Mm-hmm.
The third building is 204, mm-hmm. where Barvino is
yes.
now. So part of the issue was 200 and 202 were most impacted by this crumbling wall, because there's a common wall between
yeah.
200 and 202, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So essentially, whenever the west wall collapsed and they deemed 200 East High a dangerous building, and they went in and started evaluating that building, they realized that the shared wall between 200 and 202 East High was starting to exhibit some of the same issues, or so like that water infiltration and some hidden decay, which is essentially what structural engineers think brought down that west wall of 200. They think that they were starting to show that same signs on that common wall.
Okay.
So because of that, they ended up declaring 202 East High Street a dangerous structure too, and had to evacuate that building.
Okay.
But on top of that, you also have 202 is connected to 204, but essentially you have three buildings connected to each other.
Right. So beyond that also then, because of this dangerous area, they blocked part of Madison right there.
Mm-hmm.
And for been better part of 2 years. Why has it taken so long? I mean, this seems like a simple prospect. One of the buildings needs to come down. And so what has slowed this down?
It's not going to be a linear explanation. So there's been a lot. So after the wall at 200 collapsed, and the owner of that was trying to decide whether or not he wanted to repair or demolish that building at the time. Well, then around that same time, they found out that the shared wall between 200 and 202 East High was at risk. Well, then Nidert Properties and the Weibergs, who are the owners of 202 East High, they started debating on who owned the shared wall, because there was a agreement back in like 1800 something. I don't remember what the exact date was. And they weren't sure exactly who was responsible for repairing that wall. So they argued about that. They pretty much ended up filing civil suits against each other, asking the court to decide who was responsible for that. That went on until about June or July of 2019.
Hmm.
And Cole County presiding judge Pat Joyce, she said that Nidert Properties was the one that owned the wall, and they could move forward with repairing or demolishing that wall. Andrew and I had decided by that time he wanted to demolish. And because of that, the Weibergs had filed an appeal, And then at the same time, while all of that was going on, the city decided to get involved. So the city was essentially giving the two property owners deadlines saying you have to repair or demolish your buildings. Mm-hmm. But because of the civil suits and because of those two property owners arguing back and forth, they kept missing those deadlines.
Right.
And the city kept saying, you have until this time. Well, then they miss it. And the city will say, well, you have until this time. And then they miss it. And the city pretty much kept saying they were trying to negotiate with them. So that's why they kept allowing those deadlines to be missed. And finally, the city said, these buildings are dangerous. They went through the abatement hearing process and decided that those buildings were nuisances. And since those buildings are nuisances, if the property owners didn't repair or demolish those buildings, the city could go in and abate that. So essentially they can go in and demolish the buildings that they wanted to.
Yeah.
When that happened, the Weibergs filed a civil suit against the city for that. And so that went through a whole thing too. So you had all these lawsuits, you have a lot of moving parts. And mm-hmm. then you had structural engineers saying, yes, this building's safe. No, this building's safe. Yes, the wall's safe. No, the wall isn't safe. And you just had a bunch of issues, and that's pretty much is the reason why this has taken so long.
Yeah.
There's just been so many moving parts and so many deadlines pretty much being missed, a lot of negotiations. Finally, back in, I want to say January, the city, Niner Properties, and the Weibergs finally came to a settlement agreement, and that's pretty much what got the ball rolling.
Okay.
So in the settlement agreement, pretty much Niner Properties had to transfer 200 East High Street to the city ownership. So that's why I said Niner Properties no longer owns 200. The city now owns it. And then Niner Properties also had to pay, I want to say it was like $7,300 to the city for that. And then also with the settlement, the Weibergs were allowed to take ownership of that shared wall and had to repair that wall in preparation for the demolition that the city was going to initiate.
Okay.
That's why I said it's not a simple process.
No.
It's been all over the place.
Yeah, wow. So then it's a simple solution, right? So then boom, let's get this thing down.
Trying to.
So this week, as we're speaking, the initial plan was the building was supposed to come down on March 31st. Yes.
Yes. So the city announced that they were going to demolish the building last week. I want to say like last Friday.
Yeah.
And they were going to start the demolition process, like prep work and that type of thing,
yep,
on Monday.
Okay.
So, and then the city was going to begin demolishing the building yesterday on Tuesday. But then the contractor decided that they wanted to do some more prep work, some more interior work. At least that's what Britt Smith with the city told me.
They
so then it got getting
building,
out the shop.
Building a little more suspense there, right? Just
yeah.
A little more suspense.
Yeah. So first they were like, we're going to demolish this early Tuesday afternoon. And they got pushed off to late Tuesday afternoon. And then it got pushed off to Wednesday morning, this morning.
And so did it happen this morning?
Yeah, it did happen. I have video proof.
Do you now?
Right. Yes.
I must say, she was a bit excited about this.
Yes.
To actually see this beginning. So
it was kind of a surreal moment.
I'm sure it did. So the demolition has begun.
Mm-hmm.
We're here at early afternoon on Wednesday. And so probably about almost a floor of the three-story building is well underway of being down.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
So how long is this demolition expected to take?
So it's expected to take about 2 to 3 weeks overall. Pretty much the reason why it's taking so long is because the building is a three-story building.
Mm-hmm.
So for safety reasons, they want to go very slow when it comes to demolishing this thing.
Right.
And then on top of that, they have that shared wall. So they're leaving that common wall up for 202, so the 202 doesn't have to be demolished.
Right. So, again, backing up a little bit here, I mean, it's not an implosion where they just stick some charges and boom, it's down.
No wrecking balls.
No wrecking balls. So, at this time, parts of High Street is blocked off,
yep,
as is all of Madison on that side.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, access to that area is somewhat limited.
Yeah.
How long do we anticipate, just at the end of that 2 weeks, the roads will be back open?
Yeah, so they hope to have both roads open by then, but they're actually hoping to have East High Street open by the end of this week,
okay,
potentially. So pretty much the demolition is going to be in two phases. They're going to be doing the the demolition that we see right now, where they're actually taking down the building this week, but then they're going to be doing just some basic cleanup work, reevaluating that shared wall to make sure that nothing went wrong there.
Okay. So, and then my understanding is also Madison has sustained some damage to the road there.
Yeah.
So they're going to be working on repairing that as well.
Yeah, that's what they've said.
Okay. So what's the city going to do with this lot, right? The city takes ownership of the spot. Once they get that all cleaned up, obviously the Weibergs will take and start leasing that building again or have some purpose for it. Barvino, which is located in 204, which has been evacuated now during the demolition.
Yeah, out of precaution.
Will be back in their spot.
Mm-hmm.
What's the city going to do with a vacant lot on the corner of High and Madison?
They don't know yet, but there's some different things that they could do. I mean, they could turn over to like a private developer and have them create a new building and put it there. I mean, they could just leave it as a vacant lot or turn into a parking lot for extra spaces. They could turn into a park of sorts if they wanted to. I mean, there's a bunch of different things they can do, but I don't think they have actually settled on what they want to do.
Yeah. I mean, it is a high visibility spot there, you know, and while parking is always desired, it's probably not the best use of that parking or that space. But again, would a park necessarily be a good addition there? And it's going to be a challenge for a developer to put a building in that small in that area. So, I guess, as we stay tuned to see what plans are, I would encourage our listeners, if they have an idea what should be in that space, comment and let us know what you think should be there.
But people will probably see some more progress at 202 East High before they really see anything at 200, would be my guess.
Yeah.
So the owners of 202, the Weibergs, they're wanting to repair that wall and bring in a business. So they're not sure when they're going to be able to open that building again and have a business in there. But I would anticipate residents will see that happen before they see any progress really at 200.
Yeah.
Just from what it seems like to me regarding the timeline.
Yeah. So what is the public's reaction that you've heard from? I mean, you were sharing with me earlier that even though there is the stay-at-home order in Cole County now, there were still a lot of people out there today lining the sidewalks, video cameras in hand, documenting it. What has the public's reaction been to this whole corner there and what the city should do with it?
Yeah, so pretty much from what I've heard, a lot of people are really excited to see that building finally come down. I mean, I think a lot of people are sad that you're losing that piece of history, but by this point, people are just ready for that eyesore essentially to disappear and for that road to not be partially blocked off.
So, Nicole, one of the criticisms I've heard from folks, coffees with the editor and what I've seen at the council also, is the city residents were first of all frustrated by the length of time it took to get this done, its prominence in the place of the city, that it was an eyesore. On top of that, there's an element that there wasn't really tax liens on the property that, as part of the settlement, there's not a tax lien on it. And for most private property owners out in the community, a nuisance ordinance violation, there are tax liens put against the property. Then the last piece being the city is going to basically incur the cost of the demolition. Are those facts basically right? Am I characterizing that correctly?
So, yeah, that's pretty much right. Essentially, why there aren't any tax liens on that property is back in January, City Councilor Ryan Molman, he said that in exchange for taking down the building and having to take on the expense, the city gets to receive that lot and the $7,300 that NYDART had to pay. So it was pretty much a way for them to resolve the issues between the two property owners and the city.
Yeah. So. And so then the demolition costs, how much were those roughly?
So the demolition cost, or at least the contract that the city council approved back in January, was $186,000.
And the city's on the hook for that?
Yes, the city will pay for that.
Okay. All right. Well, Nicole, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.